Chapter 33. The two agree on a definite time of departure. He explained at length why he could not make the journey, and added, "Forgive me having led you on to fix a time. I never thought it would come to that. I supposed you would die, or something. I am really more sorry and ashamed than I can make it appear." So the beautiful plan was put aside, though it was not entirely abandoned for a long time. We now come to the incident mentioned in Mark Twain's letter to Aldrich, of December the 18th. It had its beginning at the Atlantic dinner, where Aldrich had abused Clemens for never sending him any photographs of himself. It was suggested by one or the other that his name be put down as a regular subscriber for all Mark Twain photographs as they came out. Clemens returned home and hunted up 52 different specimens, put each into an envelope, and began mailing them to him, one each morning. When a few of them had arrived, Aldrich wrote, protesting. "He police," he said, "have a way of swooping down on that kind of publication. The other day they gobbled up an entire edition of The Life in New York." Apostrophe, whereupon Clemens bundled up the remaining collection, 45 envelopes of photographs, and prints and mailed them together. Aldrich wrote now, violently declaring the perpetrator of the outrage to be known to the police, that a sprawling yellow figure against a green background had been recognized as an admirable likeness of Mark Twain, alias the Jumping Frog, a well-known Californian desperado, formerly the chief of Henry Plummer's band of road agents in Montana. The letter was signed, T. Bailey, Chief of Police. On the back of the envelope, Bailey had also written that it was no use for the person to send any more letters, as the post office at that point was to be blown up. 48 hogshead of nitroglycerin had been surreptitiously introduced into the cellar of the building, and more was expected. R.W.E.H.W.L.O.W.W.H. and other conspirators in masks have been seen flitting about the town for some days past. The greatest excitement combined with the most intense quietness reigns at Ponkapog. XV. Letters from Hartford, 1875. Much correspondence with Howells. Orion Clemens had kept his job with Bliss only a short time. His mental makeup was such that it was difficult for him to hold any position long. He meant to do well, but he was unfortunate in his efforts. His ideas were seldom practical, his nature was yielding and fickle. He had returned to Keokuk presently, and being convinced there was a fortune in chickens, had prevailed upon his brother to purchase for him a little farm not far from the town. But the chicken business was not lively, and Orion kept the mail hot with manuscripts and propositions of every sort, which he wanted his brother to take under advisement. Certainly, to Mark Twain, Orion Clemens was a trial. The letters of the latter show that scarcely one of them, but contains the outline of some rainbow-chasing scheme, full of wild optimism, and the certainty that somewhere just ahead lies the pot of gold. Only, now, and then, there is a letter of abject humiliation and complete surrender, when some golden vision, some iridescent soap bubble, had vanished at his touch. Such depression did not last. By sunrise he was ready with a new dream, new enthusiasm, and with a new letter inviting his brother Sam's interest and investment. Yet, his fear of incurring his brother's displeasure was pitiful, regardless of the fact that he constantly employed the very means to ensure that result. At one time Clemens made him sign a sworn agreement that he would not suggest any plan or scheme of investment for the period of 12 months. Orion must have kept this agreement. He would have gone to the stake before he would have violated an oath, but the stake would have probably been no greater punishment than his sufferings that year. On the whole, Samuel Clemens was surprisingly patient and considerate with Orion, and there was never a time that he was not willing to help. Yet there were bound to be moments of exasperation, and once, when his mother, or sister, had written, suggesting that he encourage his brother's efforts, he felt moved to write at considerable freedom. To Mrs. Jane Clemens and Mrs. Moffat, in Fredonia, N.Y. : Hartford, Sunday, 1875. My dear mother and sister, I saw Governor Newell today and he said he was still moving in the matter of Sammy's appointment as a West Point cadet, and would stick to it till he got a result of a positive nature one way or the other, but thus far he did not know whether to expect success or defeat. Ma, whenever you need money I hope you won't be backward about saying, so you can always have it. We stint ourselves in some ways, but we have no desire to stint you. And we don't intend to either. I can't gouge Orion. Nobody can do that, conscientiously, for the reason that before one's letter has time to reach him, he is off on some new wild goose chase. Would you encourage in literature a man who, the older he grows the worse he writes? Would you encourage Orion in the glaring insanity of studying law? If he were packed and crammed full of law, it would be worthless lumber to him, for his is such a capricious and ill-regulated mind, that he would apply the principles of the law with no more judgment than a child of 10 years. I know what I am saying. I laid one of the plainest and simplest of legal questions before Orion once, and the helpless and hopeless mess he made of it was absolutely astonishing. Nothing aggravates me so much as to have Orion mention law or literature to me. Well, I cannot encourage him to try the ministry, because he would change his religion so fast that he would have to keep a traveling agent under wages to go ahead of him to engage pulpits and board for him. I cannot conscientiously encourage him to do anything but potter around his little farm and put in his odd hours contriving new and impossible projects at the rate of 365 a year, which is his customary average. He says he did well in Hannibal. Now there is a man who ought to be entirely satisfied with the grandeurs, emoluments, and activities of a hen farm. If you ask me to pity Orion, I can do that. I can do it every day and all day long. But one can't gouge quicksilver, because the instant you put your finger on it, it isn't there. No, I am saying too much. He does stick to his literary and legal aspirations, and he naturally would select the very two things which he is wholly and preposterously unfitted for. If I ever become able, I mean to put Orion on a regular pension without revealing the fact that it is a pension. That is best for him. Let him consider it a periodical loan, and pay interest out of the principal. Within a year's time he would be looking upon himself as a benefactor of mine, in the way of furnishing me a good permanent investment for money, and that would make him happy and satisfied with himself. If he had money he would share with me in a moment, and I have no disposition to be stingy with him. Affley Sam. Livy sends love. The New Orleans plan was not wholly dead at this time. Howells wrote near the end of January that the matter was still being debated, now and then, but was far from being decided upon. He hoped to go somewhere with Mrs. Howells for a brief time in March, he said. Clemens, in haste, replied. To W. D. Howells, in Boston. Hartford. January 26, 1875. My dear Howells, when Mrs. Clemens read your letter she said, well then, wherever they go, in March, the direction will be southward, and so they must give us a visit on the way. I do not know what sort of control you may be under, but when my wife speaks as positively as that, I am not in the habit of talking back and getting into trouble. Situated as I am, I would not be able to understand, now, how you could pass by this town without feeling that you were running a wanton risk and doing a daredevil thing. I consider it settled that you are to come in March, and I would be sincerely sorry to learn that you and Mrs. Howells feel differently about it. The piloting material has been uncovering itself by degrees, until it has exposed such a huge hoard to my view that a whole book will be required to contain it, if I use it. So I have agreed to write the book for Bliss. The book idea was later given up for the time being. I won't be able to run the articles in The Atlantic later than the September number, for the reason that a subscription book issued in the fall has a much larger sale than if issued at any other season of the year. It is funny when I reflect that, when I originally wrote you and proposed to do from 6 to 9 articles for the magazine, the vague thought in my mind was that 6 might exhaust the material, and 9 would be pretty sure to do it. Or rather, it seems to me that that was my thought, can't tell at this distance. But in truth, 9 chapters don't now seem to more than open up the subject fairly and start the yarn to wagging. I have been sick a bit several days, for the first time in 21 years. How little confirmed invalids appreciate their advantages. I was able to read the English edition of the Greville memoirs through without interruption, take my meals in bed, neglect all business without a pang, and smoke 18 cigars a day. I try not to look back upon these 21 years with a feeling of resentment, and yet the partialities of Providence do seem to me to be slathered around, as one may say, without that gravity and attention to detail which the real importance of the matter would seem to suggest. Ears ever mark. The New Orleans idea continued to haunt the letters. The thought of drifting down the Mississippi so attracted both Clemens and Howells, that they talked of it when they met, and wrote of it when they were separated. Howells, beset by uncertainties, playfully tried to put the responsibility upon his wife. Once he wrote, she says in the noblest way, "Well, go to New Orleans, if you want to, so much you know the tone. I suppose it will do, if I let you know about the middle of February?" But they had to give it up in the end. Howells wrote that he had been under the weather and on half work the whole winter. He did not feel that he had earned his salary, he said, or that he was warranted in taking a 3 weeks pleasure trip. Clemens offered to pay all the expenses of the trip, but only indefinite postponement followed. It would be 7 years more before Mark Twain would return to the river, and then not with Howells. In a former chapter, mention has been made of Charles Warren Stoddard, whom Mark Twain had known in his California days. He was fond of Stoddard, who was a facile and pleasing writer of poems and descriptive articles. During the period that he had been acting as Mark Twain's secretary in London, he had taken pleasure in collecting for him the news reports of the celebrated Tichborne claimant case, then in the English courts. Clemens thought of founding a story on it, and did, in fact, use the idea, though the American claimant, apostrophe which he wrote years later, had little or no connection with the Tichborne episode. To 100. W. Stoddard. Hartford, February 1, 1875. Dear Charlie, I'll write about the Tichborne scrapbooks. Send them along when convenient. I mean to have the Beecher Tilton trial scrapbook as a companion. I am writing a series of 7-page articles for The Atlantic at $20 a page, but as they do not pay anybody else as much as that, I do not complain, though at the same time I do swear that I am not content. However, the awful respectability of the magazine makes up. I have cut your articles about San Marco out of a New York paper. Joe Twitchell saw it, and brought it home to me with loud admiration, and sent it to Howells. It is too bad to fool away such good literature in a perishable daily journal. Do remember us kindly to Lady Hardy, and all that rare family my wife and I so often have pleasant talks about them. Ever your friend, SAML. 50. Clemens. The price received by Mark Twain for the Mississippi papers, as quoted in this letter, furnishes us with a realizing sense of the improvement in the literary market, with the advent of a flood of cheap magazines and the Sunday newspaper. The Atlantic page probably contained about 1,000 words, which would make his price average, say, 2 cents per word. 30 years later, when his fame was not much more extended, his pay for the same matter would have been 15 times as great, that is to say, at the rate of 30 cents per word. but in that early time there were no Sunday magazines, no literary magazines at all except The Atlantic, and Harper's, and a few fashion periodicals. Probably there were newsstands, but it is hard to imagine what they must have looked like without the gay pictorial cover femininity that today pleases and elevates the public and makes author and artist affluent. Clemens worked steadily on the River chapters, and Howells was always praising him and urging him to go on. At the end of January he wrote, "Colin, you're doing the science of piloting splendidly. Every word's interesting. And don't you drop the series till you've got every bit of anecdote and reminiscence into it." To W.D. Howells, in Boston. Hartford, February 10, 1875. "My dear Howells, your praises of my literature gave me the slightest gratification, but I never did have the fullest confidence in my critical penetration, and now your verdict on S- has knocked what little I did have gully west. I didn't enjoy his gush, but I thought a lot of his similes were ever so vivid and good. But it's just my luck. Every time I go into convulsions of admiration over a picture and want to buy it right away before I've lost the chance, some wretch who really understands art comes along and damns it. But I don't mind. I would rather have my ignorance than another man's knowledge, because I have got so much more of it. I send you number 5 today. I have written and rewritten the first half of it 3 different times, yesterday, and today, and at last Mrs. Clemens says it will do. I never saw a woman so hard to please about things she doesn't know anything about. Yours ever, Mark." Of course, the reference to his wife's criticism in this is tenderly playful, as always, of a pattern with the severity which he pretends for her in the next. To Mrs. W.D. Howells, in Boston. 1875. "Dear Mrs. Howells, Mrs. Clemens is delighted to get the pictures, and so am one. I can perceive in the group that Mr. Howells is feeling as I so often feel, viz. Colon, well, no doubt I am in the wrong, though I do not know how or where or why, but anyway it will be safest to look meek and walk circumspectly for a while and not discuss the thing. And you look exactly as Mrs. Clemens does after as he has said. Indeed I do not wonder that you can frame no reply. For you know only too well that your conduct admits of no excuse, palliation, or argument none. I shall just delight in that group on account of the good old human domestic spirit that pervades it. Bother these family groups that put on the state aspect to get their pictures taken in. We want a heliotype made of our eldest daughter. How soft and rich and..." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.